What's up, guys? Welcome to the Angler's Happy Hour podcast. In this episode, we talk about Rob needing training wheels on his mountain bike, we cry and moan about fish we've lost, and I drive my Tundra blindfolded to the east with no idea where I'm going. Stick around.
So, Rob, I heard you fell off your bike.
I did fall off of it. It was not exactly just falling off of it. I was mountain biking. I was about 9 miles into my ride. It's a trail I've probably ridden 300 times, literally. I hit a rock with my right pedal, stopped my bike immediately, and it flung me over the handlebars. And I pretty much stopped on my elbow and my knee.
Okay. Maybe better than your head.
Yeah, a lot better in my head. I wear a helmet.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah, for sure. But it was just one of those deals. I mean, I ride quite a bit. I've ridden since I was like 30 years old. I'm 48 now. So literally the last 18 years off and on, but pretty serious about it the last 4 years. I ride, 50 to 100 miles a week. And I don't crash that often because I'm old.
You're really good at it.
No, I'm old. I don't want to crash.
How many times have you crashed?
Maybe 5 or 6 times total. This is probably one of the...
Yeah, where does it rank? Is this a better one, like a more extreme, or is it...
Yeah, this was extreme, because, okay. Like, I had no idea. I mean, it was like, I went down quick.
And it happened fast, like all of a sudden you're just on the ground.
I'm just on the ground. Yeah, and so immediately I get up, I kind of look around, and I look at my injuries, and I'm...
Assess the situation.
Yeah, gushing from my knee, and my arms hurting, and so I called my wife, and I had to ride like 2 miles to the exit of the trail to where she could pick me up. She took me home, and then went home, showered, and I came out of the shower, and I showed her my knee. I said, "Do you think I need stitches?" She's like, "Yeah."
She's looking at your knee. Yeah. Like, "Hey, I can see your meniscus."
Yeah. So anyhow, I went and got stitches, and it's getting better. Not a big deal, but it's scary.
Was it a desert trail, or was it like higher up?
No, desert trail. Real sharp rocks.
I was going to say, nothing in the desert is anything but pokey and right. Sharp and
but very falling. Fortunate I didn't land in a cactus.
Oh yeah, dude. It happens.
So
right,
like a year and a half ago, I'm riding out there, and this is the Hawes Trail system north of Mesa.
Okay,
and this guy is going backwards on the trail. It's not technically backwards, but it's not a normal direction to go. Anyhow, I run into him, and he had just literally went through a choya cactus. I mean, covered.
Is it all over his body?
All over his body.
No wonder he's going backwards.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, anyhow, I stop and I help him. And me and two other guys that I did not know at the time, we all had needle nose pliers in our packs. And we're pulling needles out of this guy for like 45 minutes. And he had a wedding to go to that night. I felt nice. So bad for the dude. Like, in his neck. He couldn't...
Was he getting married, or he was just like...
No, he was standing up for his buddy. And it was just like... I'm sure he had a story at the wedding, but probably drank plenty afterwards to ease the pain. Yep. So, but... No, I enjoy riding. It's a lot of fun.
Great exercise, right?
Incredible.
Drop like 20 pounds in a month.
Yeah. I'm to the point where now I have to stay active, or I'm just going to get heavy and not enjoy life. And I like to hunt and fish and do stuff that requires me to be physically fit.
And you see now, like, that Peloton thing is so popular, and I wonder, like, I've never tried it. Have you seen that, Rob?
The indoor cycling?
Yeah, and it's got like a giant iPad glued to it, so you can like interact with people in Spain that are riding their bike. I wonder, it's like, why not just go outside and ride your bike?
Yeah, that's,
as an outdoorsman, that's the deal, man.
You know, it's funny. It's like our technology's gotten to the point where it's like, we can get good cardio inside of our house. You know what
it's
I mean?
Ridiculous.
With like someone on the other side of the planet.
And then you can,
like,
Grubhub lunch, yeah, and you never have to see anyone.
Millennial life.
Right.
I get that if you live in New York City.
Right.
I mean, that's what you've got to do.
Okay, fair enough.
But,
right.
That's fair. Yep.
That's not what I want to do here in Arizona, on the edge of the city where you got the country right there.
Yeah, I literally ride from my garage on my bike, and I'm not a fan of exercise, but I'm a fan of getting outdoors and riding and doing hiking and biking and stuff like that. And I'm fortunate that I can do that, and it, makes me stay somewhat fit, you know.
And I always laugh when we're at your shop. You got a little bathroom off to the side, and right over the toilet is a picture of Rob getting like an inch and a half of air, like Napoleon Dynamite style, when he's like going over their sweet jump.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like, but he always jokes, like, it's not super appropriate, but it's like, I want you to be looking at me
when
you're in here
at
work.
It's kind of weird, but
no, it's funny, dude. I love it. It's like a sweet action.
What do you mean an inch and a half, dude? Come on.
It might be 2 inches. I don't know.
What might be? My jump or
your air?
Oh, okay.
You're getting some
I didn't
sick
know where
air.
You were going there. Right on.
Oh, man.
But
man, I'm glad you're doing better.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Rob is so tough that one day after messing up his knee, he was on the water. That's how tough he is.
Oh,
I'm just
in a wheelchair though. But who can? Right.
I had to drag him out of his house, and we were able to hit the water and fish the next day, man. And
I was all whiny and grumpy and
cried the whole day.
I believe that. How was the bite? Did you guys catch him?
It was not great, but we were totally experimenting. You know, we went to a lake that we fish all the time. We guide on it all the time. And, you know, we just, you know, you get sick of doing the same thing every time you go out. And if you've got clients or if you're fishing a tournament, you don't have the ability to, you know, experiment too much. You do what you know is going to help you catch fish, especially when you got people that are, you know, wanting you to help them catch fish. So we totally fish differently than we normally do.
That's one of my biggest complaints about guiding all the time. I don't get to get out and explore stuff. So it was a cool opportunity
intense, right?
To go out with Josh and do something that we're kind of looking for a bite that's not there yet.
Yeah.
But if you can be the first ones on it, you whack them.
Yeah. That's the
that
deal.
Lake, it's as pressured as they come.
Yeah.
Anywhere you go, you know, if you're chasing the bite that your buddy told you about last week or that you did last week, you're on the tail end of it.
Right,
and absolutely. Yeah. Like you said, chasing that next deal, being the first guy on it, those fish are fresh. They're ready to go, and no one's fishing for them. So they're unpressured. It's that's the whole deal. So we didn't catch a bunch. We caught a handful. But again, so Rob went out and did a guide trip a couple of days after that and whacked them. So, you know,
yeah, we went the next day. You and I were up Friday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We went out on Saturday. I normally don't guide on the weekends. I know that sounds kind of weird, but it for good reason. And I realized what
nothing
it was
weird about that. Avoiding all the lake lice, ramp craziness.
Dude, Saguaro, it was still dark out, and there was a line people coming into the water.
Not good.
Unbelievable.
And these are like wakeboarding boats, as many as bass boats.
Not even just wakeboard boats, triple axle wakeboard boats. Yeah. Like, dude,
like a house on a trailer.
Yeah, can you get one just a little bit bigger? But. No, but fishing was fantastic on the guide trip. It was pretty cool. I had grandfather, a son-in-law, and a grandson out fishing. The grandson was 7 years old, and he was the one that inspired the trip.
Awesome.
I spoke with the mom the night before or day before, and she said that he just wants to go fishing, and they're trying to look for a way to do it. And
is it a local family? Or are they
they're from Chandler area.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So, got out there and I got completely lucky as a guide. I mean, pulled up on a spot, I put my troll motor down, hit spot lock, and grandpa and dad were just sitting there, and I asked the young man if he could cast, and he's like, you know, not ri-. So I cast it out there for him, put the rod in his hand, and I was showing him how to work a little drop shot, and literally the first cast we catch like a 2.5 pounder. So I kind of helped him set the hook and pull the rod, but he fought the fish in. We got the net, got it netted, took photos of it. Did the exact same thing on the second cast and got it halfway back, and all of a sudden gets a bite again. And it's like a 2.5, 2.75 pound fish.
Fun fish to catch.
Yeah,
right?
It was awesome. So I said, okay, it's time to get dad and grandpa in. And the grandfather ended up catching like a 3 pounder, one that was, I didn't weigh it, but it was like 23 inches long.
Tank, dude. 23 inches is a tank.
Yes. So it was pretty cool, and I'm not really sure they realized how big that fish was, you know.
They never do, right?
Right. But the grandfather ended up catching a 4.5, 5 pounder. We caught a dozen fish on the trip. It was a really, really good trip. Absolutely blew my mind. It's been a long time since I've been on these lakes on the weekends, and I feel bad for folks that really have to fish. And I know that most people have to fish on the weekends.
And right.
So my suggestion is get out there early and be done early.
Yeah.
So I got
the ramp rush hour best you can.
Yeah. We were fishing out on one of the breaks, and there was a guy on a stand up paddleboard, and he's coming along, and I'm like, man, I told my clients, I can't believe that guy's able to stand up. And as I say that, a wakeboard boat comes by and literally sprays the dude. I'm not kidding.
That close.
He was cussing. And I felt, I felt horrible for him. And he was close enough to us that I could talk to him. I'm like, you're all right. Yeah, it's scary out there.
Was he where he shouldn't have been?
No.
Like, he was
hugging the bank, or
he wasn't hugging the bank, but he should not have been
trying
sprayed.
To cross the
it was totally on them.
In hindsight, I'm pissed that I didn't video it. Because that's not cool.
Well,
dude.
And absolutely right. Because I mean, that could have instantly gone
if that guy comes
horribly.
Off, yeah. If the wakeboarder, obviously he was probably a pretty skilled guy, but if he, let's say he slips, and he would have taken that guy out. And yeah, it's just stuff like that makes you really wonder what's going on.
People aren't thinking. Yeah. I guess they don't realize the danger of it.
Yeah.
And we're always talking about the dangerous stuff up here, but we were on the water so much.
But when you're there enough, right?
Happen,
you see.
Man.
Yeah. So I'm like wondering where the law enforcement is. We see that, obviously they're not always going to catch stuff like that, but a little bit later we're fishing another break and here comes a runabout boat and a dude bow riding. like they're buzzing along. There's giant wakes, and this kid is literally sitting on the bow. His feet were dipping in the waters. They're going.
No.
It was mind-boggling. Like,
so my really morbid mind thinks that on Saturday and Sunday mornings at the Saguaro Ramp, I'm going to set up a little tent and sell life insurance policies.
You would do well,
right?
Yeah.
It's like, unless they're not smart enough to buy it, bro.
Good point. Fair enough. Point. Yeah.
Maybe I need to sell it to like their spouses and immediate family. Like this could turn out bad.
100%.
For only $12 a month, you too.
I guess I'm in awe that more things, bad things, don't happen.
And not to make a joke about something that is serious. I mean, well, and like look at Lake Pleasant, right? I wonder what the statistics are on how
some
many
reason,
fatalities.
That's the one that
dude,
people
it's as bloodthirsty
pass away
as they come.
Yeah, yeah.
We were on Friday. Rob and I are on one last, we decided to fish one last spot, and there's these two girls that decide to climb up this cliff edge to cliff dive.
This will
end
well.
They're on paddle boards, and their mom is like watching them. And
encouraging
the girls are probably,
amazing.
16 to 18 years old probably. And they're just wearing like sandals. And these rocks are yellow. These cliffs are yellow because it is like a moss growing on them. It's slippery moss, and their feet are wet from being in the water. Watching them walk up with no fear, they're slipping and I mean one bad step and it's like the
You're
movie Free Solo. They probably would die. And the ironic part was Rob pointed it out. There is a white cross right above their heads where someone else passed away diving on the same spot. And Rob's like, dude, I just want to point that cross
out
to him.
I wanted to yell to him, hey, look up there.
Use that as your hand pull as you're climbing. That's why they put that there.
Right.
Leverage. Gosh, again, I've stopped making jokes about people passing away, but it's crazy. I mean, so did they jump?
They
jumped. Did.
They did it twice, dude.
A good.
Shenanigans. Yeah. But
was that like farther up?
That was on the main lake over, if you hang a left right out of the ramp,
there are all these
yellowish looking cliffs.
Yeah.
That's where they were at.
It's the area where I think all the senior ditch day guys go there. You know, you always see them, all the high school kids there.
Yeah.
Leave all their trash.
Because there's another spot up farther up the river, right? I'm sure you guys see that little beach where a lot of people put their, you know, like on the weekend when they're hanging out. And there's another one of those bluffs where people jump off of. And I mean, in the river, there's not very deep. And it's a high jump. I think even someone passed away a few years back. Remember that? And they didn't find the body for a while.
I think, didn't your guide client find him?
At Saguaro?
Yeah,
this is probably 4 or 5 years ago.
Yes.
I don't remember
if
it was my client.
Yeah.
Oh, Pete. Wait, no. Parrish. No. Larry?
Yep.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't be
real sad.
Wow, that's crazy.
Real sad story, right? I mean, that guy jumped, and this is me not knowing all the information,
I think a lot of it's involved, alcohol involved in those.
100%
things.
Liquid courage, right? I got this.
Like, I mean, the deal Josh and I watched, it was obviously not alcohol, but yeah, I think people get crazy up there, do silly stuff when they're jumping that far.
And, you know, and that specific lake just isn't huge. I don't know how many surface acres that is, but it's when you pack a whole bunch of people on that, I mean, it's, I don't know, just got to use your brain, be smart.
That's almost over, though, thankfully. I mean, like, and we enjoyed the summer fishing, but the lake's going to be real quiet soon. And Rob made one good point about, you know, the craziness of all the pleasure boaters on the lake. He goes, the good thing is there are a lot less fishermen, you know. And it's tough when you're on a guide trip. You got people that you don't want to go flying out of your boat, but if you're just out
trying to get
on by yourself or with a buddy or something like that and you can hold your own, it's the lake's wide open, and it really doesn't hurt the fishing. Yeah. It really doesn't.
Yeah. I think it helps the fishing. It might help it a little bit. Yes. Yeah.
Just the water getting
just sloshed around, and they're not getting beat up with baits. I mean,
a white noise of engines just going consistently.
They're so used to that. That's not a deal. That's.
Well, maybe it gives you some camouflage then.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure. Yep.
We used to Lake Pleasant in the evenings. We'd go up. The water's so clear that, you know, when you would get a lot of traffic on like a Saturday afternoon, it would put some mud lines in the water and stuff. And even a mud line on Lake Pleasant's not mud, but it's going to turn it from crystal clear to like a milky-ish. Yeah, maybe only be able to see 4 feet instead of 20. And that's the money right there. Yeah, man.
Use that stuff to your advantage for sure.
Totally.
That's a cool outlook on it, right? Taking a negative and spinning it around.
Yeah, it's tough when you have clients in the boat, but like Josh said, when you have, you know, two hardcore fishermen, it's
competent anglers.
Yeah, right. Not a big deal. No.
The only other thing kind of going on for us this past week was Nick, the fantasy football rookie, gets in our league. And this particular league is a bunch of fantasy football veterans. I'm only my second year. I'm the other new guy. But I had the luck last year. I literally knew nothing. Ended up winning the whole league. And now Nick, who's got three little young kids. He's got no time to do anything. He just picks his team, and I don't know if he's even touched his lineup, but he's 2-0. And I sat there the last two weekends staring at the TV all week long, scheming back and forth, setting my lineups up, and I get crushed. My quarterback is Big Ben Roethlisberger. He goes down in the first quarter in both of my leagues, but I was done. And Nick, at the end of the day, is like, oh, look, I won.
Checked it once at like 5:30 on Sunday. Like, nice. Well, he made it sound like it's pretty hard, but I think I figured it out. So when you draft, Rob, it's perfect. They just have numbers, right? And it's ranked on who's the best. Just always pick the best guy. Man, crushed it, right? And then don't touch it. Just let that marinate. Good things are going to come. But no, obviously it's beginner's luck, right? Fishing has its fair share of beginner's luck, right? How many times have you seen, you know, that play out in that arena? But it still is fun to kick your buddy's ass and then rub your face in it. Of course, after I saw that, I sent Josh a text and said, hey, dude, remember that time I beat you in fantasy football?
I was unlucky recipient of Nick's wrath this week.
So how many guys are in your area? I'm clueless when it comes to football.
That was
leagues.
Me 2 weeks ago. Don't worry.
I
think it's, what is it?
It's 10. 10 in the league. Okay. And the way it works is it's like a kind of like a bracketish style deal. But anyways, you know, well, the regular season's not even a bracket. I played against Nick's team. And next week I'll play against another team. And you actually get a record. So like I'm 0-2.
I might be 2-0.
Nick is 2-0. He's 2-0.
Last time I checked.
But, you know, it's all about you got to keep those players healthy, dude. Hopefully you got
some. Rarely does anyone get injured in the NFL,
though.
Yeah,
so you're good to go.
It's such a gentle league.
My other league, we were laughing. I told Rob this earlier, but we got an MLF fantasy football league. And a lot of these guys are new to it, but they're getting really into it because they're competitive guys. And Antonio Brown, obviously, has had all the ridiculous
nice wild card
stuff.
There.
Oh, yeah. He goes in the first round. I'm trying to remember. In the second round, and Cliff Crochet picks him up, and Cliff gets unlucky because he gets Melvin Gordon, who is holding out from his team. That was his third pick, and I got him in our league that we're in. But anyways, he gets Melvin Gordon and Antonio Brown, and I'm laughing at Cliff. I'm like, dude, you had the third pick, and
you used it on that.
He gets Kamara in the first round of the third pick, but then his next two picks, he gets those guys, and neither can play. So he ends up. Cody Meyer, who's playing, is getting super into it. And as soon as he gets let go by the Raiders, Meyer's thinking, okay, someone's going to pick him up. He's too good. So he starts trying to trade Cliff for Brown. And Cliff's talking to him. And then Cliff just goes ghost and stops talking to him about it. And then Meyer's just looking through the waiver wire the other day, and there's Antonio Brown. Cliff just let him go. He could have
traded him for something of
value. He could have got something, so he just lets him go, and then Meyer picks him up and uses him to beat me in the game yesterday. So, wow.
And so that's the other wild card, is that when you have a league with people who are paying zero attention and doing things wrong, like myself, and it sounds like maybe Cliff, then it goes against the guys who are trying to like scheme and strategize and get that wild card.
It fell right in Meyer's lap. I was so pissed off.
It is pretty fun though, I gotta say. And you know, I followed football and stuff earlier in my life and then kind of just fell out of it. But it is, it's fun. I asked Josh, you know, apparently running backs and wide receivers are who you want. And so as the draft is coming up, it's like, so LaDainian Tomlinson is still a good pick, right? I think he got inducted into the Hall of Fame already. I think he's retired 2 decades ago. But
he's been done for a while, yeah.
Selling real estate somewhere in Texas now.
Probably so. Auto draft is your friend if you're new to the league.
Pretty much,
sure.
Yeah. Pretty much.
That's cool. It's fine. Well, anyways, we'll get into some fishing talk here, guys. And, you know, we were talking about topics for this week. One kind of interesting one that everyone can relate to, no matter what type of fishing you do, are, you know, the fish that get away, the fish that you lose. We've all got several stories, whether it's, you know, just out fun fishing in a tournament, the biggest fish of your life, just all kinds of different random stuff. But you guys have, we'll start. Do you guys have one, like the one that's ingrained into your memory that is the most painful of all?
I don't really have specific ones, but I have ones that I can't even remember the tournament. I can't remember where I placed, but I remember it significantly changed.
Altered the course of your tournament.
And the worst part about, I have like three different fish that I think about. Obviously, I don't think about it all the time, but I can, if I think back, that's what I think about. Three different situations. And the reason I think of these situations is because I could have changed the outcome. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
by altering what just, you did or technique.
The first one was a Senko fish on Lake Havasu. It was a 3+ pound fish back when a 3+ pound fish was a big deal on Havasu. Deal. Yeah. You know, when a 2.5 pound average won a tournament there. Obviously, it's a lot different now. But it was a Senko fish. I did not really intend on throwing a Senko that day. So I just tied it on a lighter action rod than I should have. Because I had the other rod set up for something else, and I had a super line hook. So two completely, like, I should not have done that, right?
A thick hook and a limber rod.
Yeah, just, I mean, obviously it wasn't terrible, and, you know, probably 9 out of 10 times you'll catch a fish.
It gets the job done.
Yeah, so anyhow, I regret that. I pitched it up underneath a tree, fish comes out and eats it, I set the hook, get him halfway back to the boat, he jumps and throws it. So sticks with me.
You instantly go into the standings and say, what would I have finished if I caught that fish?
Yeah.
That's the worst, man.
It sucks, right?
Yeah, so you count the money.
Yep. The other one was again at Havasu. It was a sight fish tournament. Again, back in the day when 3+ pound fish matter. Fish were heavily pressured. I was in a real shallow, clear, Havasu's clear all the way around. This fish, every time you'd come into the cove, he'd swim off the bed, right? So I stuffed my boat. Well, I actually set my bait on his bed, trolling motored across the cove, did everything right, sat there for probably 45 minutes or an hour. The fish finally moves up there and bites the bait. I set the hook and my drag is not set.
Oh,
think about it. Like that. Yeah, like you're never going to be able to shake that. You're always going to think of that, right?
Yep.
And the third one was at the California Delta. I was fishing an area on the Delta that doesn't produce giant bites, but you get a good average, which I know the weights have changed there nowadays too. But I think I had 15 or 16 pounds in the boat, and I was throwing a spinnerbait, catching a gazillion fish on the spinnerbait, right? And you probably know where it's going. I probably should have changed the spinnerbait because I kept bending it back and bending it back. All of a sudden, I hook a fish. He jumps. It's north of 6 or 7 pounds. And all of a sudden it just goes away and I reel in the blades. So my spinnerbait broke.
That's crazy.
What are the odds on that?
That's
one
never
fish?
Happened to me in my life, dude.
Right.
And you hear about that. That's crazy.
It sucks. And why did it happen on that one? But again, that was just, I could have changed it. I should have, you know, changed my spinnerbait at some point. But so that's why those stick with me. I know I've lost other fish. I've had, you know, fish just jump off on baits that I shouldn't say you expect it, but it's acceptable. Yeah. Yeah. So those, I think of them because I could have changed the situation. How about you guys?
Well, real quick, before we even move on to Nick and myself on that spinnerbait deal, it obviously is going to vary on the spinnerbait. But so basically what happens here is that spinnerbait, as you catch fish, it gets straightened out, gets bent around, you bend it back, and it's like a paperclip. And
it's a fatigue spot, right?
Exactly.
And how do you know the breaking point? You really
don't
know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, man, how many fish can you catch on a spinnerbait? I guess it's just what you feel, but you've got to, They made titanium spinnerbaits for a while,
yep.
But everyone still prefers stainless steel because you get a lot better vibration.
Yep.
And I mean, and a lot of times a lighter wire spinnerbait is going to give you even more vibration. It's even better. But again, you know, you have to be a little more careful with those. If I see it with smallmouth, you know, when you're catching smallmouth on spinnerbaits, they destroy your spinnerbaits.
They do, yes.
They destroy them. Yep. And got to almost have, if you got one that you're catching them on, you've got to almost have like in for a day at least. Like maybe three
at least. Yeah.
But I'd say, you know, 5-6 of them, dude, to really be sure if you're in a tournament situation. Now, if I'm fun fishing, dude, I'm probably, you know, I throw baits until they are literally just like until they're just completely unusable.
Right.
But
back in the day, I was fishing broke for the most part. So I probably only had one like that. Right.
You know? I get it. I get it, man.
It's unfortunate, but that's the way it is, you know? And like you said, you don't know the breaking point. It is what it is. And, obviously, I'll remember that fish more now. Yeah, probably if I'd have caught it, I'd have forgot about it already.
No kidding. Know? Yeah, that's the truth.
That's the one mystique, right, with this topic is that we all can go back and be like, oh, man, this fish on that day, that fish on that day, and da-da-da-da-da. How many, like, epic things go right, catch a big fish or win a tournament scenarios, do we just gloss over?
Take
We're
it like, for granted.
Okay, well, we did that. Yep. Moving on.
The hook fell out in the net.
Yeah.
But it fell out, and it happens all the time. You don't ever say thank you, fish god, for that one.
Yep.
You just cuss them the next when you
it's like
when
human
you finally
nature,
lose one,
right?
You know?
We just dwell on negative experiences.
The fisherman for you. It's hilarious, man.
Really. Yeah, but, you know, it's cool, right? So then you think about it, and it's like, okay, well, what would I do differently going forward? And, you know, we're going to make a million mistakes in our life, but hopefully we make the same mistake. We don't make the same mistake twice.
Right.
Yeah, you're just trying to, again, we talked about it in the last podcast, but just up your odds, up your percentages, man. You
what
know,
it is.
Instead of 75, you try for 80%, you know, of what you hook to get in the boat. How about you, Nick? I've got one that I was with you, and I'm sure
that
I'm going to hear about this one. Let's
out.
Hear it,
yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. So again, Senko fish, you know, and some of my, am I wrong in thinking that a lot of times, dude, when you catch a wacky rigged Senko fish, was yours wacky rigged, Rob? It was, right? Or were you Texas rigged?
No, it was Texas rigged. Okay. I'm a Texas rig. I don't wacky rig a lot.
Strike me very wacky.
You're pretty about to hear line. Some hate on wacky rigs when it comes.
All right.
Hear what you got to say. Dude.
Well, dude, so like Josh and I are fun fishing, right? And that was during a period of time again where I was on the quest. Like a double digit fish. I can feel it. I was just like, eat, sleep, drink, catch something giant. And we were in a spot that truly has the potential for big fish. And it was in between spawn and post spawn, right, Josh? And I think I even remember you had seen a big female kind of lurking around off the edge where there were some beds up there and hadn't been able to catch it in the morning. I get in his boat in the afternoon. And long story short, man, I threw a Senko out there on the deep edge of the ledge. And completely stopped paying attention like anyone should, right? Making fun of Josh or pointing out a wakeboarding boat.
We fun fish. We don't take it that seriously when
right?
we're out for fun.
Watching somebody get knocked off of a paddleboard by a wakeboarding boat or something. And all of a sudden I look over like, I'm pretty sure I cast it over there. And now my line is like 4 hours different on the clock face, right? And it's like, I probably should reel down and catch this fish real quick. So who knows how many seconds that fish has been down there swallowing a Senko, because, I mean, they'll eat it, right? I mean, how many times have you got hooked a Senko fish, right? And it's like, that's something they'll swallow. So I reel down, and lift up. Long story short, dude, a big fish. You remember how big that fish was, dude? It was
giant, dude. I mean, honestly, it was one of the couple biggest fish I've ever seen in my life.
It's one of those epic ones. Yep. You know when a fish is big enough that, like, when they go to jump, they're like, A, they're efficient with how much effort they put into something trying to spit a hook. And B, I think it was just fat enough that like it wasn't getting all the way out of the water. It was like classic, like Johnny Morris, slow motion Bass Pro Shops head wobble. And it was like the most elegant spitting of the Senko. It just kind of like released, like it just boop. And then it landed and then it swam away.
Nick just didn't say anything, dude. He just sat down.
My blood pressure went to like 300 over 285. I just sat there. It's like, done.
Put a number on that fish. How big do you think it was?
It was, you know, not to sound like your stereotypical fisherman.
It's 26, 27.
Dude, if it was 10, I would have been almost disappointed.
Really?
You know,
it was that big.
Giant fish. It's so
hard
because you don't see that many that big, but.
It was
10 plus, but if it was only 10, I would have been like, dang, I thought it was a little bit bigger when I saw it out there.
It would have owned its body. Like, it was fat and it was long. I mean, it was everything that, you know, and it's funny because I manifested like this quest of catching a giant fish, and then here it is, and freaking gut hooked on a Senko and yet it still spit it out. And I was like, what in the F just happened? But, you know, we were fun fishing, so it's not like I lost thousands of dollars on that or anything.
What's funny is, hurt me. We both have a Senko story, and Senko is a high percentage.
I think if you're Texas rigging it. And there's ways to improve it, but here's my hate on it.
Okay.
Whether it's a Senko or Berkeley General, any stick bait, if you're wacky rigging, and with a lot of wacky rigs in general, with like a small drop shot style hook or wacky style hook, when a fish takes that bait, when it's rigged sideways, perpendicular to your hook, right, on a wacky rig, that thing balls up in their mouth. And when they take it and it balls up, there's no hook point to come through, and you've got a spinning rod and you don't have the force to drive it in. So dude, I can't tell you how many fish in key situations I've lost on a wacky rig like that with that style hook. I think if you go, and you're seeing it a lot more now with the different hook manufacturers and the guys that have experienced this, they're actually going back to more of an old school straight shank, longer shanked hook to get a little bit of leverage when that fish takes it. The other thing that that style hook that we were using at that time several years ago, when you pull, the hook point kind of hits the hard part of the fish, and then it just rolls. You know, like the hook can roll, but if it's actually got a longer shank, this is very hard to talk about over a podcast.
But it's more, the old wacky hook's more of a circle hook style.
Yeah, the circle hook just doesn't work.
Is that what it is, or is it?
Kind of, dude, yeah. Yeah, all these hooks that the hook point isn't that much lower than the actual eyelet that you tie to, you need a longer shank. It ups your odds, but...
So now they're going to that longer shank with the ability of it to kind of rotate, right? Like the tip of the hook can find, flesh in the mouth to bury in.
It does. And it's so hard to explain over the podcast. Take my word for it. Use a longer shanked hook.
Yeah.
You'll land a lot more fish. I was at Kentucky Lake maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and I was on just one of those typical incredible schools of fish before the carp got in there. And it was like the type of spot where you'd pull up and catch 25 to 50 fish. And at first, you get your couple biggest ones right away most of the time, fishing a big bait. And then now you've got to start really working the school to try to milk whatever else you can to get out of it. So, I start with a swim bait, then go to a crank bait. And now then I get to a drop shot, and I'm just catching 3 pounder, 3 pounder, 3 pounder, 3 pounder, catch 15 3-pounders in a row on 15 casts, but they're all 3-pounders. And then it slows down, and now I'm getting one every 3 casts, then one every 5 casts. So that wacky rig just staring at me. I got one that's rigged up with a nail in it to get it down to that school, and I'm like, dude, I know what's going to happen if I pick that thing up. I got like 19 pounds, and I've got like 3 big ones and 2 3-pounders. And it's just staring at me, and I'm not going to leave this spot. You got to show them something different. They've had enough of the crankbait. They've had enough of the drop shot. So I pick up this stupid nail weighted stick bait and I throw it out there, and I'm telling my boat official, that my marshal that I'm with, this is an Elite Series tournament, I'm like, dude, the only reason it took me this long to pick it up is I lose so many fish on this thing. Oh. And I get the bite, set the hook, and it comes up, and it's a 5 or 6 pounder. It's one of the ones I need, and it comes off, and dude, I throw that rod on the ground and start cussing that wacky rig instantly. Like I was like, I knew that was going to happen. Why'd I throw it? Why'd I pick that thing up?
Yeah.
I just hate that thing. If you can't, and there's some guys that I know on tour that have made so much money on it, and it catches big fish.
Because it's a fish catching son of a gun, man.
It really is. It's the most natural looking thing in the water.
A turd shaped inanimate object slowly.
Do you change your hook now? Or are you rig it different?
I've gone to that longer shanked hook, and it helps a lot. Yeah, like good. I'm much more comfortable throwing it now, and seem to catch more fish on it than I did. But
still throwing it on a spinning rod.
Oh yeah, spinning rod, and going to a medium heavy rod actually with braid helped also, just to kind of bury it a little bit better instead of a medium. A medium heavy with braid, and you feel that bite, and you do with that style hook, you're still not wanting to really set the hook like with slack line. You're just reeling into it, but that medium heavy rod helps bury it. And again, like I said, the way that bait balls up, a little bit heavier rod helps drive that hook through.
Get it through the plastic.
You're doing a fluorocarbon leader then?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Almost always. Yeah. I almost never tie on a spinning rod straight to braid.
Right.
But with a fluoro, and you upsize that a little bit too. Like we talked about earlier, the whole package has to kind of match. So if I'm going to do that and go to a medium heavy and give them a little more pressure, I might have to use like 10-pound test instead of 8. But it's worth it to bury that hook into the fish.
I think that's one of the biggest misunderstandings is people have the correct rod, line, hook, everything to.
It's a whole package.
And no matter what, you're still going to lose fish, but it really, really makes a difference if you pay attention to.
Might sleep better that following night knowing that at least you crossed all the T's, yeah. dotted all the I's, your game was tight. You're going to lose fish, like we said, right? I mean, it's a 75-80% game, at least if you did your part right, you know?
So, Josh, you land that 6-pounder. What's that do for you?
I mean, it ends up making me significantly more money and that helps my point situation. In that case, I ended the tournament, dude, the next day. So that was the second day. And I was sitting in like 15th place going into the third day. Third day, Saturday. This is this tournament was a bitter one for me because I had some good fish. Like I wasn't gonna win the tournament, but I think I could have crawled into the. I think I probably could have caught another 20 pounds. I had 20 pounds the first 2 days, and maybe caught it again and crawled into the top 12, and maybe kept climbing, and made it finished ninth or something. Right. You know, so maybe not. But anyways, the third day I get out there. And there was a local that had, I don't know if he, it was a very subtle spot. Like it wasn't one of the community ledges. It was a little shallower. I found it actually by fishing, not graphing. It was only 10 feet deep on top, but it was a shell bed. And there was a local that, I don't know if he saw that I was there and didn't want, in case that I ended up getting a camera on the boat, didn't want it to get exposed.
Right.
Or, you know, what happens too on Saturdays is those guys drive around a lot too. To mark spots, which is totally cool, man. It's their lake, and we're just using it a little bit. And but anyways, I don't think he wanted other people seeing it. He was out there in the dark. So when I get there, he's sitting right on it, and he wouldn't let me get on it, dude. So I never got to fish my spot all day. He never left. I asked as nicely as I tried to play it as well as I could. And he goes, "You better stay a long cast away from me." That was his words. I was like, "Okay, this guy's not leaving." So
and he texted your wife. Okay, he's in a 19-foot tracker. He said he's driving an F-150. Go in the parking lot.
Let's talk
sugar in the gas tank.
Let's talk about the mental side of losing a fish. I mean, like in a tournament. So this topic came up. Last couple of days, I've just Googled lost fish in big tournament or whatever. And it's funny watching the videos of big name pros, guys on the big tours,
on their knees,
flopping on their back. Like that's, I think you have to use it as an advantage that you know you hooked that fish and
you're doing something right.
Use the pot. I know it's way easier said than done, but flopping on your back and breaking rod tips and stuff like that, I think that's a huge disadvantage. What's your take, John? How do you react to it?
I agree. You know, it's one of those things that I look back over time and whether I've been in tournaments or fun fishing or whatever, but you know, let's talk about tournaments because that's when it hurts the most. I've had plenty where I handled well, I thought, but I've also had plenty where I didn't handle well. And I'd like to say I have total grips on it now and it's a lot better than it was when I was starting out, but there's still some that'll get to you. And it just depends on when and where. I mean, I've had some that, I knew, like, you get late into the day and you know you need one. Maybe you're not even late in the day, but you know you're not going to get many opportunities and you get that opportunity and he comes off. That's hard to deal with. But, you know, you've got it. Like you said, if you can use that and learn from it, I'm not talking about learning on how you lost it maybe, but learn, okay, well, I got the bite. I'm doing the right thing. Right. I need to keep doing this or, you know, it let that clue you in. That's a big deal. When I was younger, I remember watching a tournament, Van Dam. He is the absolute master of the mental game in bass fishing. And this is like 2009, maybe 2010. And he is fighting for Angler of the Year with Skeet. And Van Dam hooks. This is the last day of the last tournament. And Van Dam needs their neck and neck. Van Dam has like 4 big fish in the boat. I'm not exactly sure what his weight it was or whatever, but for example, he's got 4 big fish in the boat. He needs one more. There's 10 minutes to go, and he's not going to win Angler of the Year unless he gets this fish. Hooks a 5-pounder, loses it as he's swinging it into the boat, and 99 out of 100 guys hit the deck, start screaming.
Rod snaps over there like a baseball bat. Right.
So, dude, in one fluid motion, I always get chills when I talk about this. In one motion from swinging this fish in, he goes, came off. And then in the same motion, he casts his crankbait back out.
Cast.
Yes. It was so unbelievably mentally strong. He doesn't say a word. He doesn't say a word. He says, come off. And then he starts cranking again. Got another one. 5-pounder. Puts it in the boat and screams. Wins Angler of the Year.
Wow.
There you go, right? The pinnacle of how to overcome what your question was, right?
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, he didn't even think about it twice. It's spilled milk, man. It's water under the bridge. You got to move on, you know? So, you know, not everyone's able to do that, but, you know, we're fishermen and everyone's human, man. I mean, it's easy to freak out.
That story reminds me, and I don't know why it reminds me of one, but the funniest thing, I was at Lake Mead fishing a Bassmaster Open tournament, and we're in the back of the Muddy and the Virgin. The Muddy's on the left. Yes. Yeah. Back of the Muddy River. And there's like an old farm submerged and these like fence rows, and the fish were just can't come up to spawn. And we were throwing spinnerbaits, and you could catch them on a spinnerbait off the bed. You're obviously not seeing them. You can just wind it by a bush. And anyhow, that was back when it was pro on pro. And I had a guy in the back of my boat. He was throwing a spinnerbait. I was throwing a spinnerbait. And he gets a bite. I mean, absolutely crushes his bait. And the bush rattles. Dirt rolls up. I mean, it was like, I'm like, oh, that's freak.
Swamp donkey.
He throws a fit in the back of my boat, stomping, kicking, like darn near crying, right? I'm like, that was interesting. He's in the back of my boat, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of get my troll motor going a little faster to get him away from it.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a total dick move, right?
Well, I mean, that format breeds itself
totally
for dick moves.
Yes.
Like, how did that ever work out?
How you survive.
So all I did was make a mental note of that bush and got him away from it while he was throwing a fit.
Just circled around.
Kept fishing, do-do-do-do-do. And throwing my spinnerbait, no bites. I come back around and I make a long cast of this bush. He can't reach it yet. I just barely get to it. This fish rattles my spinnerbait like completely, and I completely miss it. I set my spinnerbait down, pick up my jig, and I beeline with the trolling motor right to the bush, pitch it to it, thunk, 4 pounds, 10 ounces.
Oh my.
On Lake Mead. Think about it.
Yeah, that's big.
Did you ask him to get the net?
I just swung him in the boat.
Just kidding.
He knew, dude, right?
Oh, he knew.
What'd he say?
Oh, he bagged on me on stage. He did. Wow. Fishburne's like, who cares? Who cares, dude? He caught it. It's in his bag. It's not in your bag.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. The guy was a trip.
That is fun.
He was a total trip. Like,
what a crazy format. You know, when you hear about those stories about pro on pro, and didn't you have to, like, at a certain time, he gets the front of the boat and then you go to the back?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that how it works?
Yeah. And so this same gentleman was like, okay, it's my half of the day. I said, where do you want to go? He goes, I want to stay right here. I said, it doesn't work that way. These are
my
fish.
He wants to fish your fish from the front, no doubt.
Dynamic.
Yeah. So we went to another cove, and it's a total mental game when you're fishing like that. I think he lasted an hour doing what he was doing. And we went back to my stuff, and I fished out of the front. But that's just how, that was a total mental game. I sound like a complete dick saying that I did all that, but that's just the way it was. You know, it was,
you're playing the game.
It was 100%.
You signed up for the rules.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
He did too. Yep. I mean, it is what it is.
That's how sports are, dude. Yep.
So, but it's to make myself not look like such a dick in that situation.
It's
had situations where I drew the guy that was leading the tournament, and I literally never cast in front of the console. And I actually fished with two guys at one opens back in the day. And
that said something right there.
And
man,
I just never, ever messed with him. So that's, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just the right. Everyone gets their turn.
Right. So
here's a good one, man. Some of the more memorable, and so everyone loves Aaron Martins, myself included, you guys included. He's one of the best guys ever. Mm-hmm. Yep. One of the best fishermen of all time, most accomplished bass fisherman, entertaining, good, just a great guy. One of the nicest guys. I got so many good things to say about Aaron, but everyone knows, and he knows, he freaks out when he loses fish, man. And, you know, a lot of these highlights that you see from bass tournaments, you know, he's in several of them.
Right.
And, dude, I got to see one a few years ago that was not on camera. We were sharing a spot.
Live, yeah.
Yeah. We were sharing a spot on Mille Lacs. And Mille Lacs is full of gigantic smallmouth. I mean, full of gigantic smallmouth. And it's late in the day. It's glass calm. You could hear a pin drop. And we're on a boulder field. And I'm probably 20 yards away from him, maybe 20, maybe 30 yards away from him. And we're just on both on the outside, our respective outside edges of this boulder field. he's throwing a jig, and I'm vertically drop shotting these boulders on my graphs, and he's casting a jig. He's fishing it differently than I am. He casts this jig out, long cast, and I hear him set the hook. You hear the whip of his hook set. I look over, and this fish is just slowly coming up to the surface, and he's already saying it's a big one. And this thing comes up and just gurgles on the surface, and it is a giant smallmouth, like just like Nick's largemouth that can't jump. And when a smallmouth can't jump,
that's big.
That's
it's a big smallmouth, yeah. Dude. It's 6 or 7 pounds, huge. And he fights it all the way to the boat. He gets it to the boat, and it's not ready to come in, or he's not ready to grab it. So he's going back and forth with his rod on the side of the boat, figure eighting it. Exactly. And he does it for 20 seconds and it just comes off, dude. And he throws the same thing. His rod goes up. He hits the deck and he goes, no, not that one. Not that one. Anyone but that one. Not that one. Not that one.
The fish is probably sitting in the shadow of his boat, like two people, just laughing.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Blowing bubbles.
It was so hard to watch.
How long,
man,
did it take him to recover? I mean,
he gets back up and I'm fishing. It's dead silent and I'm not trying to say anything. And
like, how's your bite, bro?
You should have fed the fire a little bit.
Yeah. Dude.
Looked like a big one.
His marshal goes, did you lose him?
No, he didn't. Yes. No.
Because you lose him?
And you witnessed manslaughter.
You didn't have to add any fuel to the fire. Oh, that was enough. Right,
that's a 55-gallon drum of gas. Wow. Right there.
Oh, yeah. I had no idea. Aaron gets up, starts fishing again, and he's talking to this marshal. He's like, dude, that was a 6.5-pounder. He goes, dude, that was a 6.25. Dude, that was a 6.75. Dude, that was a 6.5. For the next 15 minutes, dude, that was a 7-pounder. Dude, it was 6+, dude, 6+. So, and then after 15 minutes, he looks over at me after not saying anything. He goes, dude, that big one I lost, bro.
It was a 6.5-pounder.
You're like, no, tell me about it.
Yeah. So this pause the question, right? I don't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's it. I mean, he ended up having like 23, 24 pounds anyway. He's in top five. Yeah. He was fine. Amazing. But that was just it was a treat to watch.
Yes.
So have you ever gone back? Well, I guess, Rob, your story is exactly that. You go back and catch the fish, right? So like, lose a good one. You guys have a lot of experiences in that where like you end up catching the same fish or...
I've got a really funny one at Saguaro. Years ago, I was out there by myself, again, throwing a Senko. Pitching it on a bait caster Texas rig, I see a fish swim out of the tules. It's 5+, right? I pitch it out in front of him. Nothing really happens other than my line tightens up. I set the hook and my line must have had a nick or something, just gone. Completely gone. Didn't even turn the fish, right? I sit back down in my boat. I tie another Senko on. I stand up. The fish is still there. And this fish is not on a bed. He's just swimming around.
Hanging out.
I pitch it out in front of him. He sucks it in. I set the hook in the hook.
There's two Senkos.
Two
in
Senkos
his
in his mouth.
Like so, a catfish.
Like he never almost even knew what happened. It was crazy.
Crazy.
So, yeah. I mean, fish don't have as much of a memory as we.
Well, right.
You know what? I think we give them way more credit than.
It's just an animal with a brain the size of a walnut.
Yeah.
Right.
And they need to eat to survive. That's right. The bottom line. So.
You know, I have an experience like that using live bait as a little kid. And I mean, with live bait, then it's a lot less. You know, it's easier to believe, right? And same thing, we had an inflatable raft that we used to put on top of my dad's Lincoln Town Car, and he was nice enough to haul us to a little urban pond, and we'd stop at Water Dog Willie's, which is a shout-out to the olden era of the Phoenix fishing game, and we would just go drown minnows and water dogs off of a Surveyor raft, and we caught this poor fish like 6 times. Same thing, it looked like he had like lip piercings. We
that many
him.
Times?
Dude, it was at least 3 or 4 times. You know, we're fishing tules with minnows.
Was it on a bed?
No, he just lived in the, it's a small urban pond, right? Like, where's he going to go? He's going to swim
hilarious,
to the fountain,
man.
And then swim back to the tules, swim to the fountain. But yeah, that poor thing, we got to the point where it was almost not even fun. He felt so bad for him. When you're 8 years old, you'll catch the same fish thousands of times and it's all good. But you know, I don't, Josh, do you have anything with like Rob's story with artificial bait?
Yeah, you know, not that many times, but you know, one thing, one species that is like, I'd say in freshwater, the most aggressive and not the smartest would be a pike or a pickerel. And I remember being a kid, man, fishing in like northern New Hampshire. And then, you know, you see it now, even when I go fish up north, those things are so ferocious and they, with their teeth, they bite you off. So dude,
oh, sure.
When I was little, I would be throwing a soft jerk bait or a Senko so many times. And, they'd bite it off, and they'd bite it off again, and they'd bite it off again, and I'd be like, dude, those are all my hooks, you know? Yeah, I was like, bastard. 12, you know? So you'd hopefully finally catch it and get your hooks back.
Get all your hardware back out of it.
Yeah. I don't know. I caught one on going back to like 2013. I'm on Lake Erie, and I'm on this one big isolated boulder, and first day of the tournament, I lose this gigantic pitch black 5-pound smallmouth.
Oh.
Like pitch black. Like it was a unique looking fish. And yeah. I got it. I was really close to the boat. I almost had my hands on him when I caught him, but he didn't break the line. So I can't say for sure it's the same fish. And obviously you're in Lake Erie. So dude, there's a lot of smallmouth in there,
yeah.
But it's just one boulder. And it was like a one fish type boulder, like from boulder to boulder to boulder.
That was his
boulder,
home, right?
That was his boulder.
Yeah.
And, second day I go back fish there. I don't catch them. Third day, I really need them, dude. Like, I don't have them. I've only got, you know, five for like 12 pounds. And I'm on the edge of making the classic. And this is the last tournament. And I need that fish. And it's late. And I caught that sucker.
That's awesome.
A big black 5-pound smallmouth. Yeah. And I'm like,
how cool is that?
I don't know if this is the same one, dude. But I feel a lot better about losing him the first day now, you know. So I don't know if it was or not. But I'll always remember that one.
That's cool. Yeah.
Dude, Rob, you've pulled up this picture from an epic
five-day
trip we had.
Hold on a second.
Let's hear this.
This is May 29th of 2016 at 6:16 a.m. I went fishing at Canyon Lake with you guys.
Yeah. Oh, oh my God, I forget this story. Oh, yeah.
How big do you think that fish is?
2.5. Maybe 2¾.
2.5 plus 5.5.
Yeah, he's a pretty good sized fish, and I believe Nick had him on for a while.
Of course I did. I just warmed him up for Josh.
Going into this, to preface this,
made, like always.
Rob and I have been fishing every day all spring, and Nick had just had a kid, so he hadn't been
recurring
fishing.
Recurring theme in this podcast.
It is, yes. Yep, sound familiar, huh? He hadn't been fishing in months. He's like, this is a... Like, it's just, Nick's probably more jacked up to go catch a fish than we are, right?
I need referrals for vasectomies. Just throwing that out there. Sorry, go ahead.
Dude, how'd it go down, Rob? Do you remember exactly?
Well, I mean, we have to say we were cheating because we, remember we netted.
We're netting shad.
Yeah, we're netting
right?
shad.
I mean, whatever, it's legal.
Canyon so Lake, giant bass, and they're just busting bait, right? The shad are spawning and the fish are feeding up post-spawn. And so I make a few casts with the cast net. We fill the live well up with shad, and we go to catching them. Nick hooks into this giant fish, right? He's fighting him to the boat. I don't even think, were we even netting him? We didn't even really care. We're just having fun, right?
Right.
And I'm talking like multiple fish between 5 and 8 pounds, don't you think, guys?
Dude, it was unbelievable.
Ridiculous.
It was just a school.
Top 10 of all time fishing day.
Yep.
And this is a special thing. We didn't do it with live bait all the time.
No, it just, yeah, just because it was that good.
Totally.
Right. I'd been guiding on that deal.
Yeah, you can figure it out
how to
find the shad. Yep.
So Nick hooks this fish, and he's fighting him to the boat. And at what point did he come off?
Oh, good. I mean,
like broke
ways
off.
Into it. Right.
Broke him off.
Teeth broke the line.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe 10 minutes later, I hook into this fish. Nick's hooks in its throat. I could care less about catching that fish other than that. That was the best part about it.
Love you too, buddy.
So, dude, I'm so happy you remembered that one, man. That
awesome.
Might be the best of it all.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. That was a lot of fun. But that, like,
it wasn't a lot of fun though, as I remember.
It was awesome. Nothing better.
If it's your buddy's fish that you like to talk trash to as it is.
Right. I remember backing your trailer down that afternoon and just dropping it in drive right from reverse. Just to give you a little love.
Yeah.
To
appreciate that.
But
that's awesome, man. Well, man, that's just how it goes. You know, it's part of fishing. You're going to lose some fish. No matter what you do, and there's times where they're a lot more susceptible, like, you know, in, I don't know, do you guys think in colder water you actually lose less fish because their mouths are maybe the cold water, their mouths are a little bit more firm and they don't fight quite as hard?
I've never thought of it that way, but I guess it's possible. Maybe they don't jump as much.
Maybe all those things combined. But I would say the worst time is post-spawn because these fish their mouths are. For some reason, after post-spawn, especially these big females, like, their mouths are so much softer.
Never even thought of that.
It's
yeah.
unbelievable. And so these fish also, they don't maybe fight quite as hard, but they don't bite with the same intensity
right.
that they do at other times because they're just so tired from spawning. And if I look back at a lot of my biggest lost fish and most lost fish, post-spawn. I was on Toledo Bend one time on a shad spawn bite, and this is post-spawn, you know, and this spot, I found it, I barely touched, scratched the surface of it the first day. I caught a 6-pounder at the end of the day. It was a fish that was just hanging around. We call it a bald spot. You know, there's a lot of grass on this flat, and the shad would spawn on these bald spots. And I caught a 6-pounder on a jerkbait at the end of the first day of the tournament on this bald spot. So I go out the next morning, and there's a massive shad spawn going on with big fish, and I catch a big bag, and I make the cut. And the third morning, I get out there, and it's happening again. But the best way to catch them was a jerkbait, and a jerkbait and big fish post-spawn, you got little bitty treble hooks that got these soft mouths, and it was, dude, it was like the worst morning of my fishing career. Wow. I ended up
dropping fish left and right.
So I started the day by catching like a 5 or 6 pounder, and I'm stoked. And I throw back out there and hook a 6-pounder, bite it all the way to the boat, comes off. Okay. Throw back out there again, another 6-pounder, fight all the way to the boat, lose it. And I'm like, dude, this is not happening. You know, no way.
Yeah.
But now my confidence is totally rattled.
Oh yeah.
So I throw back out again. Not kidding. Probably a 7.5 or 8-pounder. This is the biggest one. And I knew it the whole way in. I'm like, I'm going to lose it, dude. I'm going to lose it. And sure enough, I fight it forever. And my boat had kind of like drifted off the bald spot into the grass. And he gets right below the boat and makes one last run. And with those little hooks, you can't force them too much. So he gets down in that grass, feeling him down on the grass. And I'll never forget the feeling of like when that fish comes off and you feel the thump of your bait, whether it's a crankbait or jerkbait. And I'll never forget the feeling of like the heavy fish to just like thump, 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 thump. That's my jerkbait just coming up. But I had a 20, I don't know what, afterwards I ended up thinking I had like 28 pounds on the line. I probably would have been leading the tournament, and I ended up weighing in like 13 pounds and missed the final cut that day. But anyways, post-spawn fish, I don't think you lose all those fish if they're if it's pre-spawn and their mouths aren't so soft and worn out and gummy.
That's an interesting take. I've never even thought of it that way, but yeah,
time, they just time don't eat year. It with the same enthusiasm. Yep. You know,
and you know, not always, but you're throwing baits with treble hooks that time of year, so it's kind of like a double.
You're right, double top water, whammy. A lot of top water too.
Yeah, anytime you hook a bass on treble hooks, you're just like, well, how's this one gonna play out?
It's funny how you talk, how your confidence gets rattled though. Sometimes you do different stuff too once you get rattled.
Yeah, right.
You know,
rod positioning, or you know.
I remember a guy in a tournament at Lake Mead. I can't even remember the guy's name, but he told me he was nervous of even getting a bite because he was so afraid he's going to lose it. It's like, how can you get that bad?
I don't want to get a bite. Yeah. That's funny.
It was
dude.
Hilarious.
Dude, I think you were the mental master of the mental game.
No, this guy wasn't in my boat.
Were you chirping on him? No.
No, he wasn't in my boat.
You probably just gave him that stare, the Rob stare.
That's funny.
I'm glad I didn't draw you, dude. I wouldn't be friends.
Yeah, we would. We'd be fine.
I'm just kidding.
A decade or two later.
But what? I mean, how about when you have a fish on when you're fun fishing and you lose it? Would you rather see it before you lose it?
Yeah, I think
so. I would.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, you know, like guide trips. It bums me out when a fish is dogging a client and we never see it.
Yeah, no kidding, man.
You know, I want to at least see it.
Yeah.
So.
And it takes away the mystique because otherwise it's like 3 or 4 pounds bigger when you don't see it.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Good point.
That's true.
Yeah. Like that was an 11. 4.5.
Nick and I had a buddy. We'll leave him nameless because he's a great guy. But when he was first getting into fishing, he's telling us he had lost a 13-pounder, and we're like, dude, you lost a 13-pounder? He's like,
was
yeah,
it a 12
man.
Or 30?
He goes, I'm like, did you see him? He goes, no.
Oh,
he goes, but
he
I caught
formula.
A 6-pounder.
Did he break?
And this one was
line?
Pulling over. He goes, I caught a 6-pounder, and he was pulling over twice as hard.
Oh wow,
so
he
was
good at math.
Yeah,
wow,
yeah,
right.
Huh.
I don't know if it works like that.
I kind of want to ask who it was, but I'm just going to keep
it. I'll tell you later, dude.
The guilty nameless, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's one of those instances, though, where you like smile, nod. Like,
oh, yeah. Pulling twice as hard. That's
funny.
Great.
Yeah, but I don't, that's a really good question, man. It definitely, I guess, yeah, you want to see, and sometimes there's the question, was it a catfish or a bass, or was it a trout or a sucker,
right,
or whatever you're
right.
fishing for? Was it even the species? And sometimes it makes you feel better if it's not a For sure. Not a bass. When we were fishing the other day, dude, we were around a bunch of yellow bass, me and Rob, and there's a bunch of yellow bass down there, and I'm getting just gnawed on, man. My bait, I throw a little Carolina rig craw, power trigger craw, and Rob's like, dude, are you gonna set the hook? I'm like, no, man, it's a yellow. And he goes,
famous last words.
He goes, set the hook, man. So I set the hook, and my rod just doubles over.
He bows up on this thing, and it comes off. He's like, oh, that was a yellow. I'm like, no way, dude. No way.
Trying to make myself feel better, yeah. But
it was two yellows. Yeah. Right? Yeah. One was on the bottom, whatever. One was on the top.
May not have been a yellow, but now we'll never know. I'm telling myself.
In your defense, though, I went back to that spot with my clients, and we caught a giant.
There were no yellows there.
Did you?
Yeah, we caught a.
What did you spoon over there at all?
Yeah, the young man, I had him spoon, and I had the adults drop shot, and he caught like a, I don't know, maybe a 11 inch yellow. So pretty good size.
Did you catch more than that, or just that one?
A couple more. So yeah.
Have you guys ever ate a yellow? I've heard those are like delicious.
They are good. Very good.
Fish taco special, right?
Yep.
There.
Super good. Heck yeah. That was a good time to go get some, man. That whole salt chain is full of yellow bass.
Them. Interesting. That's good.
Places that you've never even seen them before. Man.
Really?
They're everywhere. They just blew up.
But yeah, I mean, that's cool because for a little while it seemed like they were MIA, right?
Yeah, the bass ate them all, dude.
Yeah.
But, you know, the bass have been doing their own thing the last couple of years, hiding from that algae, and now they're back. But they'll clean them up here before
they
too
will,
long,
yep,
you know?
For
but
sure.
We'll go have some fun catching them in the meantime.
So, man, what's next for you, Josh? I think you're about to gas up the truck, right?
Yeah, a few times. So I'm going to head over. I can't say where it is, and I don't know exactly what lakes it'll be on or whatever, but I've got a Major League Fishing Cup tournament coming up in just over a week. So I'm leaving in 5 days, and they tell us what state it'll be in. They tell us they're going to tell us what city to go to, but that's all we know. We don't
know. Mission Impossible. Is there like a theme song and something like shows up?
I hope so, dude. This is my first cup tournament, so it's gonna be a new one for me, man. But I hope it's that interesting. That would be awesome.
I know I've never asked you this. So you bring your truck and boat, but you fish out of their rigs.
You can bring your boat, but you're gonna fish out of there. So on the Bass Pro Tour, Major League Fishing Bass Pro Tour, you fish out of your own boat, all your own stuff. But in this situation, you're fishing out of their boats. They're Nitro Z18s. So
so it's not, you can't fly there and.
You could, but it's going to be a pain.
Because all your tackle and all your...
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to just throw all my tackle in the back of my truck and drive. That's the plan.
Are you bringing a boat?
I'm not going to
bring
it. Just bring
your truck.
Yeah, you could bring it because you do have some off days and there's stuff that you could do in the off days. But, man, I'm just gonna throw it all in my truck and, focus on the tournament at hand. And I don't know how I'm working out how I'm going to pack because this is different. I mean, it's normally I've got everything in my boat.
Prepared
and,
game plan.
Yeah, and you know where you're going. But in this situation,
you have to bring everything, huh?
Hey, you know the region, but some of these regions are trickier than others. Like going to central, where I'm not going to say it, I can't say it, but going to where I think I'm going to go, I think it's a little bit more narrowed down, but there are some places where you may be fishing smallmouth, largemouth spots, clear water, dirty water, rivers, tidal, so much.
Yeah, so you'll have a full truck bed.
Yeah, yeah, and you got to get in the boat because you wake up that morning, you still don't know where you're going. So, I'm working on trying to, just downsize my tackle a little bit. And, we're not even allowed to look at maps and stuff for where we're going. So that it makes it fun and really exciting. Yeah. But trying to figure out how many rods and stuff I'm going to bring. And my truck will be full of them, but I don't know how many I'm going to get into that boat. Yeah, I'm stoked for it, though. It's something different.
What are the dates of that?
It's the end of the month, whatever, like the last week of this month is.
And is that stuff on live or is it?
No live. So this will be in the dark. You know, they shoot these in the dark and I'm not even allowed to come home and tell you guys how I did until this thing comes out on TV. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, we'll see.
We're going to give you Chinese water torture to get it out of you. So you'll have your work cut out for you.
Dude.
I'm going to tie you up, drip water on you slowly.
I'll be like, fine, I finished last.
Yeah.
Fine, I'll admit it. I finished last. At least you can go have, if you have a good tournament, it sucks. But if you have a bad tournament, hey, man, you don't have to, you don't have to like come home and explain yourself to anyone. It's the worst after a bad tournament.
Why is Josh so happy this time?
All your friends are like, hey, how'd you do? You know, you work in the expo. Why are you
scrolling?
What's the worst question? Like, what happened?
Oh, sure. Yeah. You know, dude, we talked about this before in a different podcast, you know, like the armchair quarterback thing. Like, you got to have an open mind and, okay, you obviously did something wrong. So if someone wants to maybe throw their two cents
dig
in
there a little
but,
bit.
But, you know, dude, if you're out, fishing the Red River and someone asks you if you tried flipping.
Seriously.
That's happened before. Yeah, that's frustrating.
Damn good idea. Yeah. Wow. We have another guilty but remain nameless friend too, and I love it. He'd tell Josh, man, just scrolling and scrolling on his phone looking for the results. Like, that's a real
makes me feel good after a bad tournament,
dude.
Buddy.
Like, you cracked triple digits. Yeah. You're way down there. Like, love you too, man.
Yeah, no doubt. No. I'm stoked for it. What do you got? You got a couple trips coming up, Rob, this week?
Yeah, I got a couple trips later this week. Hopefully on Saguaro, and we'll see. You never know. That lake's, we take people out for 4 hours this time of year, and you just never know what can happen in that 4 hour period.
So. At least you're sweating less.
Yes.
You're getting to sleep a little longer.
Yep. The mornings are nice and cool. And
yeah.
Yep.
I mean, we've turned the corner.
We have. We
can see the end in sight.
Yep.
A lot of the country is like fully embracing fall, and it might even be chilly. And we're like, dude, the high is only 104 today. Nice.
That's the truth, dude. Up north, all my buds that fish the smallmouth waters, they're sending, you know, it's
pictures of them wearing like jackets and stuff.
Yeah. Almost too cold, you know, but I'm ready for it.
Nick,
yeah.
You're going to get out with the family camping this weekend, huh?
Want to, man. Awesome. Yeah, we got a 2-month-old at home right now, so it's still, you know, touch and go on that. But like we had talked about recently with the elk bugling, man.
Yeah, get up and listen to them.
Yeah, have my kids. Think there's like a Sasquatch or something coming at him through the grass.
That'd be awesome. That'd be fun, dude. They're gonna love that experience.
Well, I'm Josh, jealous. Good luck on your tournament. And
if it is in Oklahoma, try flipping.
If it's you know, the Red River, dude. Red if River. It's on the Red River, try flipping.
Right, yeah.
right on. Well, hey, it was fun, guys. We'll do it again soon. Thanks for listening to the podcast, guys. If you get a chance, please leave us a 5-star review and make sure you check out our Instagram page.